I think I know your name.
Oh, sure.
How are you?
I think they did it once.
Still be able to, you're still be broadcasting.
They're not for the perfect rate.
Yeah,
I don't mind it.
That's a pretty good rate.
Unless you need your the whole presentation, the whole presentation's here, so that makes sense.
Really? Interesting.
Then I wouldn't even need to be on them on Zoom.
Well, you'll have to.
Did you try the other one?
Which other one?
The other daughter? The other one?
Yeah.
Which daughter is this? What's your last name called?
Okay. We will call to order the Northview Fire District Board meeting. Today is Monday, August 3rd, 2026. This is not our normal time that we meet. However, this is the time that we have set for the Truth in Taxation public hearing. And we welcome everyone who is here in the public And we note that all members of the Board of Trustees are here, and we welcome all of them, as well as the staff and administration of the district. We will begin with an opening prayer, reading, or expression of thought in the Pledge of Allegiance that will be led by Kristen Meekins.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we go further in the meeting, I thought it would be appropriate, just for the benefit of the members of the public who are here.
You had a thought to give that. Cool. That's okay. Your thought is probably more important.
It's not.
I don't know.
Kristen, sorry. My apologies. First.
And it's probably, I'm going to say exactly what you were going to say. Okay. Good evening, and thank you for being here. One of the greatest strengths of any community is people who care enough to show up. We appreciate your time, your involvement, and your support as we work together to keep our community safe.
Beautiful. Thank you. I thought it would be helpful for the members of the community that are here just to have us give just a brief introduction of who we are and which community we represent, or if you're at large. And Chris, let's start with you. Just name and city that you represent.
I'm Chris Clark. I represent Harrisville.
Leonard Call. I'm at large, so I represent all three cities.
Kristen Meacham, I represent Harrisville.
I'm Meredith Ardina, and I represent Pleasantview.
Don Arrington, and I represent North Ogden.
I'm Tim Wilwright, and I represent Pleasantview. I'm
Jay Johnson, I represent North Ogden.
Very good. And we'll also introduce the staff here in a minute. In fact, Chief, if you could just introduce them when you make your presentation,
sure.
That would be great. So item number two is public comments. And just so we're clear, this is not regarding the tax increase. That would be, you'll have an opportunity during the public hearing to make any comments regarding you, but regarding that. But this is just a general, or if there's any public comments or any comments that the public would like to make to the board, now would be the appropriate time to do that. Okay. Seeing that there are none, we will move to item number three, the budget officer, which is Chief Maxfield, is to make a statement pursuant to section 59-2-919, 8B2, that the interim budget includes a proposed property tax increase. Chief Maxfield.
Hey, Chief, will you share? Let me get my clicker work first. That's a different statement than what's on the agenda.
What's that?
Then that's a different statement than what is on the agenda. What you just read.
He read number three.
I know.
He said that the interim budget, and this says Mike.
It's a proposed final.
I was reading off. Sorry. Thank you. Yeah. So in our boardable, All right. So let me call item three again. The budget officer to make a statement pursuant to section 59-2-919-8B2 that the proposed final budget includes a proposed property tax rate increase. Chief Maxfield.
Big part of the allow me to share.
Oh, you did.
Yeah.
Wonderful. By the way, Kristen, I'm sorry for calling to say Meekum instead of Meacham.
I'm married into it, so.
Okay, so this is a state, I'm sorry. Before I start, I'm Chief Maxfield. I've been here for 3 years. I've got 20
7 years in structured firefighting, two in wildland prior to that, Salt Lake County. I was with West Georgia for 24, and I've been lucky enough to be with all you fine people for the, just about the last three. Chief Jones, want to introduce yourself real quick?
Yeah, my name is Jeremiah Jones. I'm the Deputy Fire Chief over Operation. I've been at Northview Fire for 22 years total, as the Deputy Chief for the last 13.
Well, Mike,
go ahead, Chief Barker, yeah.
Named Brian Barker. I'm the Deputy Chief and Fire Marshal here. I've been here for 13 years.
I'm Nikki Roylock. I'm the District Clerk, and I have been here for 7.5 years.
And Jeff is also here. Jeff, or Dr. J, we like to call him, is our accountant. So if we have any accounting, if you guys want to go deep into the numbers, I'm going to defer him real fast. So
yeah.
All right. Required state. This is a new component of the new state law dictating how we manage ourselves through our budget process up to and through TNTs. Right. So there was some confusion last year that we got caught up in. I'll touch on that a little bit. But to help us, I suppose, navigate the already complicated process, that decided to add more requirements. So this is one of those. So I'll read this. Pursuant to section 592.919.8b(2) or II and 592.919.4bi of the state code, budget officer me intends to state the following. The Northview Fire District is considering a tax rate that exceeds the certified rate. The Northview Fire District is considering increasing the certified tax rate to generate an additional $493,424 in ad valorem tax revenue. The purpose of this increase is to support capital expenditures, including the purchase of land for and construction of Station 23 in Harrisville. The proposed tax rate increase is approximately 9.7%. Northview Fire District has provided notice and conduct this meeting tonight as a public hearing as required, where members of the public, you, will have the opportunity to comment on the proposed increase. And there are copies, well, there are not copies. Yeah, I think we checked that.
Thank you, Chief Maxfield. Case, we'll go to item number five. The budget officer presents and makes available to the public a property tax impact schedule as a separate document from the other budget documents pursuant to section 59-2-9198B II and 59-2-9248B.
Okay, there are copies available in the back. I think you all picked up one up, right? And these have been available, published on our district websites, uploaded to Utah's Right to Know, updated on public notice websites, and included as a separate item at every public meeting that we've had since we started the budget process pursuant to the Utah State Code. We've got to go through this. So the Northview Fire District will consider an increase to its property tax rate to generate an additional $493,424. Following information is intended to provide decision makers and the public with an explanation on how the district's operations would be affected if the property tax rate were changed. So our proposed revenue with tax change would be a total of $5,603,699. The Northview Fire District, if we were to accept the certified rate from the state, our revenue would be $5,110,453. The additional tax is the $493,424 in ad valorem. If the tax rate that's proposed tonight is approved, the tax rate that was given to us or suggested to us by the state is 0.001094. That's down from 0.001096 from last year. The proposed tax rate to achieve this increase in ad valorem tax revenue would be 9.7%. Estimated annual increase to a primary residence. Average residence in the district was 544,000. Taxable portion of that would be 55% of that, resulting in an increase annually of $32.19. The estimated annual increase to a business, because they're taxed at 100%, unlike the resident, primary residence, would be $58.52 per year. This is for capital improvements, i.e. bonding for purchase of land and construction of a station in Harrisville. The proposed property tax increase is intended to support Purchase of property 4 and the construction of Station 23 in Harrisville, additional revenue generated through proposed increase in combination with existing capital funds, projected new growth will assist the district in maintaining reliable emergency response capabilities, support continued community growth, and sustaining operational readiness throughout the district. Any questions on any of that?
If I just comment,
yeah.
Either I heard it wrong or
not, correct me if I got it.
Did you state the fiscal year 27 certified or the proposed fiscal year 27 property tax rate again and the estimated increase?
Yes, sir. So
you hear the 0.0012.
Yes, sir. So the proposed FY27, the tax increase that's being considered tonight, will be 0.0012.
Will you read those three? The Northview Fire District's current property tax rate, read that one, then the certified rate and the proposed property tax rate.
Proposed revenue with tax change. So if the property taxes approved tonight would be $5,603,699. Without the increase, we would go to the certified rate of 0.001094, which would give us a total tax revenue of $5,110,453. The additional tax is $493,424 that would be generated from the increase. The last year's rate was 0.001096. 9.7% increase. They get it all.
Yeah, there is a slight discrepancy.
So this one is the property tax from 6-9, the paper that we have. So was there an updated one?
Yeah.
Just want to make sure it's all.
I appreciate that. Yeah, like we learned last year, every little detail.
What was the date on that paper?
Let me see
if
one
you
have
them.
Yeah.
Well,
I was
just listening. Oh. But that first number was right there.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, the 5603699 is the correct number, right? Oh. Yeah, that's what they're saying. Anybody want to tell a joke?
That happened.
So,
this is the updated 6-9. Okay. So the ones that you guys have are correct. So proposed revenue, the one that's advertised, the one that's on the website. So proposed revenue with tax change, $5,603,877. Thanks, Larry. Looks like the rest of the numbers are correct.
19, 58, 50.
Did we have any questions?
Yeah.
Okay. Again, this is a new state element, so we're figuring that out.
Questions on the numbers or questions on that proposal part?
Oh, we're going to get it. The whole thing? So we should know in the minutes that the one that was posted on the website and distributed at the meeting is the correct, right?
Okay, so we will go to item number 6. The budget officer presents and makes available to the public the fiscal year 2027 proposed final budget.
Okay, and the last element that we'll touch on before we get deep into that, this is the most important apparently the most important element in this entire process. This is what we did not post in our public meeting last year. This list right here showing the other entities in the county that are also raising taxes was the reason that the state declined our tax increase last year. So here it is. It's available to you. This shows all the county who is proposing an increase and how much and what percentage. Those are also available here.
Okay. I think we checked all the state boxes. Nikki, do you want anything else on that tax impact schedule?
No.
Okay.
All right. Now that that's done, we can actually talk budget. All right, so budget timeline, this is where we are. It's quite a process. Again, the state's now requiring us to start even earlier than we ever did, with more requirements required all the way along the way. So we adopted a tentative May 28th, worked our way through the public meetings, adopting tax rates, holding public hearings where required, which puts us here today to consider the tax rate that was included in the interim budget that was adopted on June 11th. Tax summary. Again, 493,424 an additional 9.7% increase. Residential and business impact, post rate of 0.0012, like you saw in the tax impact schedule. But again, just a reminder, and I've already kind of mentioned it, we approved $364,937 last year to support capital expenditures. Same thing we're coming back to ask for this year. Had that not got denied because we failed to present to you the consolidated list that you saw, which was very important, with estimated new growth, that's a difference of about 2.2% this year. And we're about $375,000 lighter than our capital expenditures budget. So the money last year, and you were here last year, and we talked a lot about capital expenses and making sure that we could supply our fleet and have a healthy capital improvements plan fund. That money was earmarked for that instead of being spent for that because our tax increase was declined. We were forced to take that out of existing funds or one-time funds. And it also left us short this year for capital funds, which were, you know, we try to plan ahead, try not to just pop up with a 10% tax increase, tried to plan ahead to shore up our capital expenses fund and then also have available funds putting us closer buying the property and building this station that we've identified that we need. Budget philosophy, we want to maintain exceptional service levels while operating efficiently and responsibly. All of our budgets, everything we do is aligned with short and long-term operational objectives and needs. We don't do almost anything on a whim. Everything is planned. Everything is driven by our strategic planning process and our priorities. Let's start with expenditure. So expenditures, this proposed final budget has expenditures of about $8,388,577. You can see that the largest part of our expenditures is in operational costs, and we do try to be as lean as we can here, but that's really a small slice of the pie, right? It really is the people, and they are worth it. They're phenomenal, well-trained, and we have to retain them. They are worth it. But you can see with benefits, they're nearly three-quarters of our total expenditure. We do things to try to save money, though. We want to be good stewards of the public's money. We try to find cost savings. We are not wasteful. Since I've been here, we reduced overtime $100,000 annually, so $300,000 over the course of the last 3 years. We identified an error in the way that we were paying Social Security, which is now saving us about $250,000 annually. We were actually able to recover just over $500,000 from the IRS for mispayments of Social Security, which helped us weather the storm last year and helped us offset that $375,000 we had to shell up for an ambulance. We were able to put that back into our capital expenditures fund. And then compensated absences this year was something that we're still ironing things out. We got really, really organized in the way that we manage our different available funds. And we were able to shift how we manage the responsibility for compensated absences from an existing line item in the budget that has to have a corresponding revenue source rainy day funds if they're needed. And because we were able to do that, we're actually able to reduce our compensated absences liability line item by almost $168,000 this year. Even though it is such a small slice of pie, we do look at our operational expenses every year and try to whittle those down. This year, By eliminating things you can see here, we're actually able to reduce our operations, that green slice, by nearly $60,000 this year. Moving on to revenue. Surprise, surprise, property taxes are number one, right? Ambulance fee, we still get a good chunk. Paramedic program has been huge for that. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. Impact fees is getting bigger. We redid our impact fee schedule well. And then grants add in there just a little bit. But again, majority of our funding is property tax. Did anybody see what's not on there? Sales tax. We don't get sales tax. We're a district. We're not eligible to receive sales tax at all. All right. So brings me to this. District, this guy's kind of ominous, right? Tax man. Nobody likes taxes. I don't like taxes. For us, property tax is the only source of public money other than billing fees and services. There is no inflationary adjustment built into the way that the state manages property tax. I think that's a common misconception. So if we do nothing, there's no automatic adjustment if costs of goods and services has gone up. We get the same. Property value increase does not create new revenue for us. That's another common misconception I get asked all the time. Well, how come my property value's doubled? That means you guys get double the tax. That's not true. All of your property all of your property values go up, our tax rate goes down. The only time that you'll see your tax rate go up, if your property tax increased, is if your property went up and yours went down. Because you have to share the same amount of money. We collect the same dollar amount of revenue taxes every year. The only additional tax we get without doing something like this is from new growth. And now they've even limited that a little bit more. So new growth, now it's limited only to brand new buildings. Used to be if somebody built a building and then finished out the inside, then it'd get reassessed at a high rate, and then we would get that as new growth. We no longer get that as of this year. So unless it's a new building, we don't get it. So, any other questions on that? Okay. So, again, I hope that illustrates just how reliant we are on property tax in the district, and we really don't have many other options. But that doesn't stop us from trying to find other ways to increase our revenue. And we've done a pretty good job of that. So non-tax revenue, our total budget, so our total property tax, 5603877, non-tax is $2 million, almost $3 million in non-tax revenue. So we're not just, so you know, beholden to the property tax and relying 100% on the citizen to give us their money. And then we've also readdressed our impact fee schedule 2 years ago, last year. And been able to increase the amount of money that we're seeing from new construction impact by over $100,000 a year. Our ambulance fee billing has gone up $50,000 a year, and it looks like it might even be going up more than that because we are getting a lot busier. And then a new PMA contract this year increased by $40,000.
Would you just tell them what PMA
is? Yeah, tell
me. Oh, yes, for sure. And I'm going to get more into that. But yeah, so paramedic services is run by the county. It's something that, as a resident of the district, you've been taxed for 30 years. But we did not provide the service. So that was subcontracted to Ogden Roy Weber. That's it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Last July 1st, and prior to that, we were able to negotiate our way into the paramedic program. So we're now receiving those funds, and it's almost an exact wash for what district residents pay. So we're getting $635,000 a year in revenue from the county to provide you with better paramedic coverage. Again, that's something you've been paying for all along, but you were waiting. I have some maps that I'll show you. You were waiting longer than you should have been for paramedic service and probably didn't even know you didn't have it, right? Okay. So, new revenue added over the last several years. Like we talked about impact fees. That's roughly $200,000 since we've made the adjustment. Annual paramedic contract, $635,000 a year. Ambulance collections up over the last 3 years, about $150,000 a year. So we hear a lot. You need to find more revenue. Find more revenue. We are doing the very best we can. I think we're doing better than most. Back historically, here's how our revenue and our tax collection look. So here, right here is our total revenue from fiscal year 23. This is our total non-tax revenue. You can see how they almost mirror each other exactly, right? So yes, total revenue. And of course, this is expenditure too, because we have a balanced budget. They are almost exactly the same. This is your property tax revenue. All right. So where did the additional revenue come from? 614 or 37% has come from non-tax revenue. We haven't asked you for that. Property tax revenue from new growth accounts for about 38% of that. So again, that's not something that we've asked for. It's something that if a new building is built or a house, then the county says this now gets included for you. 413,000 or 25% of that four-year period was property tax increase. So 75% of the revenue that you see here was from non-tax sources. Cumulative change over time, over that same period of time, total increase cumulative was about 10.5% when you adjust for new growth. When you take that new growth out and you say, what taxes did we actually go to the citizen for and say, we want more or we need more to be able to do what we're doing? 10.5% over that 4 years, or about 3.4% annually. CPI inflation was 9.5 or 3.1% over that same period. So again, we don't get an inflationary adjustment automatically to our property tax collection. If we go 4 or 5 years accepting the certified rate without adjusting it for inflation, we're essentially getting a tax cut, right? Our dollars don't buy the same. If inflation has gone up 3.1%, we can buy 3.1% less with the dollars that we receive. All right. So I know we want government to be lean, and we are, truly, truly are. Compared to a fire district of the north end of Davis County, who will remain nameless, who runs almost exactly the same service that we run, almost the exact same number of people on duty per day, two stations, about 12 guys a day. Really, we look almost identical. Fiscal year 26, to us in fiscal year 26, was $1.5 million difference in how we're providing essentially the exact same service. And I think more impactful is we're doing it for nearly $1.9 million in taxes. So I hope you guys are proud of this board. They're doing a phenomenal job of being stewards of your public money. We are literally doing more with less than someone who's exactly the same as us. All right, so where do we go from here? All of this starts with a plan. I mentioned this in the beginning. We don't do anything without a plan. Everything we do fits into our strategic objectives. Nothing is just on a whim. We don't just decide we want to add a program, station, people, or all these other things. We're driving towards an objective. And it's taken us a long time. Really, the strategic planning process started before I even got here. So in September of 2023, we had a company come in and do a study to look at our organization, to see how well we were doing things. They looked at us financially, looked at us administratively, and they looked at our service and how we provide it. Once I got here in October of 23, we dove headfirst into the strategic planning process. We did internal workshops. We worked with the board. We went out to the community and did an online workshop and sent out surveys and asked for input on what kind of service do you guys want, right? That's an important thing to know. Before we set goals, what's the destination that the customer wants? So digital town halls, internal workshops. We approved that strategic plan in March of 2024, and we update that every single year prior to budget to make sure that we're still driving towards the objectives that your citizen representatives want. Those strategic priorities that came out of that were response excellence, administrative efficiency, employee development and wellness, and employee morale and retention. And again, I say this to the board, I think they get tired of me saying it. We will be the best fire department you want us to be. Period. What kind of fire department do you want us to be? That's what the planning process is about. Let's look at who we are, where we are, how well we're doing things, how well we are, where are we falling short, and let's decide what kind of service the citizens expect. And they determined that they wanted to be exceptional. We took that to our internal stakeholders, the employees, and they said, we can be exceptional. Like, we want to be that too. And that's what we've been trying to do. Our plan was built to give you exceptional emergency response. Spoiler alert, we're not there yet. We're doing really good. We're not exceptional yet. Really good. All right, service level. So I wanted to dive in this a little bit deeper. So I haven't done this before, so this might be a little different. But like I said, I said this to the board all the time, all through the strategic planning process, will be the fire department wants to be. What's your service level expectation? And I wanted to try to define that a little bit more for you guys and for you. So really, how do we measure that? Well, we have to find experts, right? Can't just be my opinion. We look at NFPA and we look at ISO. Those provide us benchmarks. But the board determines that level at the end of the day. We do know from the community input that we got during the strategic plan kind of planning process and, frankly, the response we got regarding fireworks recently, that our community wants to feel safe. And we definitely want to feel safe. All right. The question is not whether risk can be eliminated, it can. But service choice really is about how much risk you want to take. Right? We can never eliminate any risk at all, but the more we prepare, the more we're ready, the more we're well-trained, the more resources we have distributed appropriately throughout the community, the less lucky we have to get, right? The less risk that we're willing to tolerate. And really, those are all driven towards outcomes, right? We want the right outcome. We talk about that so we're blue in the face as fire service professionals. Outcomes, outcomes, outcomes. What do those mean? Well, outcomes, the difference between the outcomes we expect and the preparation we put in place is what we call a risk gap. So the risk a community is willing to accept is called that risk threshold. Here's a little illustration. So preparation and investment. This is achievement of desired outcomes. This is risk in red. And the gap at the top is how much risk we're willing to accept, or the community's risk threshold, right? So as we invest, and as we prepare, and as we get better, and as we expand, that gap gets smaller. Again, we can never reduce that to zero, but think of this risk gap, again, as the amount of luck that we're going to need to make sure that we get the outcome that we want. To do that, To identify those risk gaps or response gaps, we leaned on, again, not just our own opinions, we leaned on ISO and NFPA, but we also leaned on a study that the county commissioned, the study of the paramedic program, the internal study I mentioned that was done in September 2023. And then when I got here, I took both of those and did my own deep dive to try to decide, okay, where are we so we can set a course for the future? Yeah, NFPA is the standard, 1710 is the standard for response. It outlines the different standards that we should try to meet. It's not a law, it's not OSHA, but they are best practices. It is what we should be. It's a measuring stick. It's one way to say, okay, how do we measure up when we're talking about response and our current capabilities? Specifically, it says 4 minutes or less from the end of turnout time to the arrival of the first arriving engine company at a fire incident. And it recommends 8 minutes or less for the deployment of a first full alarm. So that for us would be 3 engines in a truck, an ambulance, a medic unit, and a fire team. Says that we should be in 4 minutes or less from the end of turnout time. That's the time that the guys get in the truck and push the button on the radio. Should be able to put a first responder, EMT, or higher level capacity at an emergency medical incident. So you'll hear us say 4 and 8 minutes a lot. Remember, that's travel time only. I don't want to give you a false expectation of how long it takes when you call 911 to get somebody there. That's from the time 911 centers process the call. They've set off the bells. Our guys get to the trucks. When they get in and push the radio button, they are en route to your emergency. That begins that 4 minute or 8 minute. It's the amount of time it takes them to travel from here or wherever they are to your emergency, the time they set the park brake. 8 minutes or less from the end of turnout time, the arrival of advanced life support or paramedics at an emergency incident. So those are some of those benchmarks. And the other ones that we use were the insurance services office. So that's an independent organization that collects and evaluates information from communities across the United States on their fire suppression capabilities. Insurance companies use this data or similar metrics to set your fire insurance rates. Benefit to that is it can save you a pretty substantial amount of money over time on your insurance premiums. We did the math in this community. If we were to go from a 3 to a 1, looks like it probably have a total community savings of around $1.3 million back in your pockets. The ISO says fire engines should be located 1.5 miles within the properties that they protect. And ladder trucks, like the one here, should be located no more than 2.5 miles from the property they protect. Fire stations should be distributed so that at least one engine company, one ladder company can respond to any location within the community in 8 minutes or less 90% of the time. Fire stations should be strategically located to account for traffic patterns and road conditions, and fire stations should be staffed and equipped with adequate personnel and apparatus to provide effective fire suppression and rescue operations. So if you don't want to take NFPA's word for it, ISO, that's the insurance guys. Nobody does risk better than them. and they take risk apps and they put dollars to it. So they look at our system, we compare ourselves to it. If they say that you don't have enough fire stations, engines, or people, they're not well trained enough, or your water system's terrible, they assign risk as a dollar amount on your insurance premium. That's why we use them. All right, so what did this analysis produce? What were the identified response gaps? The district is meeting NFPA standards for engine staffing and resource assembly, but only when mutual aid resources and ambulance personnel are available and mutual aid units are included. So recommended was daily staffing levels should be increased to maintain 5 people at each station. We've done that. Recommendation, reliance on outside agents should be reduced through addition of a third engine staff with at least 3 people. That's an ISO standard. The district is falling below NFPA and ISO standards for ladder truck service. Recommendation, a ladder truck should be placed into service at Station 21. We did that in 2021. The district is failing to meet the 3 engine recommendation of ISO based on the size of the structures and the area covered by district resources. We only have 2. Our ladder truck is both. It has a pump on it. The big city guys laugh at us because we have a pump on our ladder truck, but that's what we got to do. So it's a ladder truck and it has a pump on it, so it checks 2 boxes for ISO, and we have an engine on the hill. So the recommendation was a third engine should be added to the district and staff would be minimum 3 people. The district is currently covering more populated square miles and more citizens per firefighter than Weber County Emergency Services providers. The recommendation from our analysis was that additional personnel should be added to correct for this deficiency and a plan put in place to keep pace with population growth. All right, so here's that comparison of the county resources. So you can see where we end up there. So this is citizens per station. Again, we're lean. We're doing more with less every single day. Citizens per station. Dead last tied with Roy, who is now joining Weber Fire District. Firefighters per 1,000 citizens. Again, we are at the very bottom. We're the leanest. We're serving the most square miles and the most people with the least fire stations and firefighters in the county. Next recommendation was paramedic service provided by Weber County is failing to meet the requirements for ALS paramedic incidents. Specifically in the northern Pleasant View and North Ogden area, the recommendation was to develop a plan to provide District 911 paramedic service to transport. And we did. That's something we did. And we were ready to do it the hard way because we felt like it was that important. And luckily, we were able to negotiate ourselves into the county program. Again, probably didn't even have any idea you didn't have it, right? So here's the map from the City Gate study that showed that all of Station 22's area, essentially the entire east side, what's that road, Jeremiah?
3100.
Everything above 3100 was outside of the 8-minute travel of the county's program. So we were able to use this, again, data analysis and a plan to go to the county and say, this isn't working for our residents. This was something you were already paying for 20, 30 years and receiving substandard service from the system that was in place. So this is something because of our planning that we went. We fought for, and we got. And now, your coverage from this beautiful truck that we received secondhand from Roy covers that entire area in that 8-minute truck. So we're making progress. Are we exceptional yet? Not exceptional yet. We're doing pretty good. All right, additional recommendations. District is currently covering more populated square miles and more citizens per fire station, and the North County resource distribution is significantly lower than in the South, negatively affecting the district's reliability and resource assembly time. So the recommendation was additional stations and apparatus should be added to correct the deficiency, and a plan should be constructed to maintain an effective station distribution adequate to meet current and future needs. So here's those numbers. So this is fire stations per square mile. So again, we're dead last in the county. Firefighters per square mile, also at the bottom. This is that map that illustrates that. So you can see these are fire stations. These are R2. You can see the size of the areas that each one's covering. And you can see how concentrated these resources are south of the county. Again, not right or wrong. They may have chosen to have better service than we did in the past. But okay, recommendations. The district has limited distribution of fire personnel and apparatus across the service area, resulting in longer travel times and lower scores on the ISO scoring system. So the recommendation was future fire station needs and locations should be identified through the construction of a station deployment master plan for the distribution of resources across the district. And the recommendation was made that future fire station locations should be identified and construction should be considered. So we did that, and we used the ISO 1.5 mile travel because it was the strictest, but it roughly mirrors, and you'll see some 4-minute travel and 8-minute travel. It roughly mirrors 4-minute travel, maybe a little bit tighter. So this is how far 1.5 miles is from station 22 and 1.5 miles from station 21. So we identified, based on those gaps, 3 potential new station locations. And then we looked at planned growth. So where do we think the growth is going to happen? The one that worries us the most is all this mixed use. So all this green, turquoise green, that's all mixed use. That's going to have higher density, which we're seeing is leading to higher call density per citizen. We also looked at heat. So where are our calls happening? It makes the most sense to put your resources where your calls are happening, right? So this is our heat map. So the heat is medical calls. So you can see that they're really located, really just south of us here is kind of the hottest spot. And we have some hot spots along the 89 corridor. Things warm up a bit up here, but not as much. And then these icons are fire calls. You can see our fire calls are pretty heavily concentrated just south of here. This is our travel. So you can see it's a little bit different. This is a good map. This shows in gray, this shows the theoretical travel that the computer says we can go in 4 minutes. Again, remember, that's not 4 minutes from the time you pick up 911 call. That's 4 minutes from the time the boys are in the truck and they're driving your call. 22 is a little bit more limited. You can see the green dots are the calls we made it in 4 minutes. The red dots are the ones that we missed it. It took us longer than 4 minutes to get to. So you can see we really have an area of concern here, right? And then this entire 89 corridor looks like we're underperforming. And then you'll notice some red dots in here that I'll talk about later. It took us a minute to figure out why we were missing so close to the station, right? Theoretically, we should be getting those. Why are we not getting those? We dug a little bit deeper, and I'll show you. All right, so based on that, we determined that, So again, trying to decide, all right, where's our first move here? You know, it's a big elephant. I don't think we can take a bite of it all at once here. We're going to have to divide this up. Where's the location that deserves the most attention right now? And then we also consider future infrastructure projects. So, we'll go back to this one here. You can see, and this is what we call planning zone 25. You can see we're missing a lot here, right? And that looks pretty alarming, and we're missing a lot here, and that looks really alarming. But what we don't want to do is make a move too fast without all the information. So we looked at future infrastructure projects. Mountain Road, it looks like it's only a couple of years from being completed, right? So we think we want to wait and see before we invest a whole bunch of your money up into the top of the mountain up there, which probably will eventually need a station. And we want to see what impact this has for Station 22's travel. And the Skyline project, which I think is a little bit farther down the line, will connect all the way down to Highway 89 eventually. It should really help us out in what's called Planning Zone 24 when that's done. But we think that's going to be, we hope that's going to be a big game changer to allow us to get rid of a lot of those red dots up in that planning zone. All right, so based on all that, it was determined that Station 23 in Harrisville was the preferred option, and that's what we've been moving forward with. So what exactly are we proposing? 2-year build. So we're not, and this is important, we're not going to be able to snap our fingers and the station is built and it's happening. We do have to try to project in the future a little bit. So when we're considering not only the needs and shortcomings of our system right now and trying to project what our system demand will be into the future, this station won't likely even be complete till January of 2029. But if we don't start working on it now, we're afraid we're going to be behind the curve. Total build cost will be 9.6. That includes money to purchase the land, we think. We'll have to talk to our Harrisville friends about that. Sounds like a lot. Unfortunately, it's not. Clearfield just built a station designed by the same architects. Cost them $16 million. Syracuse, I want to say, was $13 million. This really is not extravagant, but we also didn't want to build something that wasn't built for the future. We're trying to be prepared. We want to build a 50-year building, something that is going to last. Cost to staff and operate. Also don't want to pretend like there's not additional cost to this. I want to be as transparent as I can with what we're proposing and what it's going to cost to actually staff and operate this thing. So this breaks out plan. This year would be that 9.7%. Fiscal year 28, we see no station-specific impact next year. Fiscal 29, we would hire the 9 employees that will be required to staff it. They'll come on for a half year. So we'll split that 1.5 over 2 years to try to lessen the impact. So they would start ribbon cutting January-ish, 2029,
pick up the second half of that staffing cost that next year. Total all-in cost, you're looking at about $1.9 or $2 million all-in cost distributed over the course of those 4 years, or roughly the same amount of money that North Davis is charging their district to provide the service we're providing right now. But really what everybody wants to know is, how does that affect meters, right? Now, those are big numbers, but this is why, you know, public good like fire service and public safety is distributed throughout the community. We all share in the cost of making ourselves safer. Fiscal 27, this is that 3218 you saw on the impact schedule. These are annual 29, 50, 50 total all-in costs to build the station of about $134 a year. So again, you're still under $500 a year, which to have the type of insurance that provides, you know, 15 highly trained professionals on duty 365 days a year, Christmas morning, one phone call to show up at your house to solve all your problems, I think that's pretty good insurance. If I could pay $500 for car insurance every 6 months, it'd be pretty good. But I have three teenagers, so that's not going to happen. All right, what do you get for that money? This is the design, and this started out as a combined project with Harrisville. They wanted to partner up with us, and we thought there would be some good savings to the taxpayer by sharing some exterior walls. As we work through this, the new Public Works building, and you've seen their new police station and City Hall coming up here. As the project sort of evolved, we really kind of separated out from them, and I think that was good. That allowed us to slow down. Harrisville was moving pretty fast. We wanted to slow down a little bit. We wanted to be a little, you know, a timeline that we were comfortable with. And this cleared up a lot of things like, you know, who pays for the HVAC system, you know, whose property is it, all those other things. So again, it did, and it looked like the cost savings for sharing exterior walls wasn't quite what we hoped it was. So we actually think this was a blessing in disguise that it evolved this way.
Hey, Chief?
Yes.
You want to tell them where exactly it is, kind of down there geographically on
the page? Yeah, have you guys seen this right across from Ben Lomond Golf Course? So right on 89, right across from the Ben Lomond Golf Course. Have you guys seen the construction there? Yeah, it would be closest to 89, but not quite on 89 itself. So, like I said, we want to build the right thing for you. We want to build the right thing for the future. We think this is a 50-year building, 7-bedroom, 3-bay, double deep. Again, not extravagant, not big, not fancy. We think it embodies the personality of the district. It's trustworthy. It's solid. It's functional. It's us. But again, it's not a fancy thing, but I think it's still good looking. Exterior shots, just the kitchen, you know, not huge, common area, small day room. Kids not included. Exterior shot. Okay, but more importantly, how does this improve your service, right? We talked about those gaps and the ones we wanted to address. I want to show you exactly. Faster response times along the 89 corridor. So this reduces the risk of poor outcomes due to extended travel times that we identify. So again, here's this map of our Bated Misfits. And then this would be with the addition of 23. So we captured this, and this really was kind of a pessimistic projection by the computer. Actually got out and drove it in my car and was able to get all the way to the county border in less than 4. So we really think it's gonna cover this entire area, whole 89 corridor, and we think that'll be preserved for a long time in the future because of how strict the state and UDOT are about allowing access and egress on and off of 89. We think we're going to benefit from that fast travel up that 89 corridor for a long, long time. Faster assembly times of resources, hopefully producing better outcomes, reducing the risk of poor outcomes due to the lack of adequate resources close to the incident. It doesn't take just one fire truck or one ambulance or one EMT or one firefighter to handle an emergency. In our business, we go through what's called a risk assessment for the community that involves identifying the best calls that we run, and we measure those based on probability, consequence, and impacts. Probability is how often that event happens. Consequence is how many people are involved, and whether or not it's fatal or just life-threatening. And then impact is how it impacts our ability to continue to provide service. So if a lot of our resources are tied up on one incident because it has a high impact, like an MVA with multiple vehicles or patients, that's a high impact because now we're not available to respond to
other emergencies that are happening at the same time. And then we also go through what's called task analysis, figure out how many people we should be sending on each one of those calls. So for this example, a high-risk EMS response, like a cardiac arrest, we need a minimum of 6 people to respond to that call to be able to do all the things that have to happen all at the same time to be able to get the outcome that we want to get. This kind of lays out what those are. So scene safety, patient care, CPR, airway, medications, IV, and IO access, bleeding control, spine immobilization, preparing for transport, dealing with the family as a liaison. So for us, on a call that's that severity, you would get the engine or the ladder. You would get one ambulance. It will be the transporting unit, provide you with 2 EMTs. And then if it's a Charlie or Delta level call or a severe call coded by dispatch, then you also get that medic unit that we've had since last July to show up. And all of that should produce the outcomes that we want. This shows kind of your realistic times. This adds in the amount of time that it takes the guys to get from the inside of the station to the truck and the time that dispatch has to kick those out. And this is where those numbers come from in NFP. So this is cardiac survivability. So you can see that we start hitting brain death around 6 or 7 minutes when you add in the time it takes dispatch to process a call for them to set up the tones for guys to get the trucks to go around. You add 4 minutes to that. You're looking at 6 minutes and 15 seconds would be the best case for us to get somebody on scene to start helping with their emergency. And then we need to get ALS or paramedics there within 10 minutes or 10 minutes and 15 seconds, which is a long time if you're waiting, I know. But this is a better indicator of the outcomes I like to see. So this was our guys, Weber County 7-year-old boy reunited with first responders. That's paramedic Diego Cruz. You can't say for sure, but this was only months after a paramedic unit went in service at this station that didn't exist a few months before that. This kid was clinically dead, wrapped up underneath the car. He was hit by a driver. They pulled him out. They worked him all the way to hospital, and they brought him back. It was incredible. And again, I can't imagine had that medic unit not been here. But again, a little bit of luck involved there. Again, talk about risk. They happen to be here. They happen to be in service. If they're not sure we would have got the outcome that we want. For bio, we do the same thing. So you can see large interface brush fires, probability a lot higher after last year, right? Like, yeah, that's for sure. Consequent 8. Impact, I would have said maybe even higher than that. We were tied up on that for a week, and we had units on that forever. Single family residential fire probabilities, 10. We get those. Consequence of 4, impact of 6. And then we work down those. We categorize them as high, moderate, to low. And then we work up our critical tasks to figure out how many people need to show up for that. Now, NFPA also provides some guidance on this. They say 15. Based on our stacks and our needs, we say 19. We don't get 19 all the time. This is what we get in our first alarm in our area. Our ladder, our engine, our ambulance, our medics, and then we have to have at least 2 aiding agencies respond in order to get the 16 people that we need to put a fire out. Why do we need all those people? Because all of these things need to be happening all at the same time. First engine needs to get there to try to keep it from being 2 house fires, try to slow things down while everybody else responds and can start putting those different assignments into action. We need all these people, if we can, within that 8-minute travel or 10 minutes, roughly, to be able to keep, again, a fire either to the room of origin or to keep it from spreading the house next door. So this is defined on that. NFPA ISO, fire growth, flashover. That's why these numbers are what they are. So flashover is when everything in the occupied structure hits ignition temperature all at the same time and everything ignites. It all auto-ignites. So we stand a lot worse chance of being able to get a handle on it if we arrive after flashover. So the goal is to get 1 unit there, again, add in dispatch delays and time for our guys to get the trucks to put their gear on. You're looking at about 6 minutes and 40 seconds to get there just prior to flashover to hopefully keep it maybe in the room of origin. Maybe we'll be able to save either lives or property that's in the original house that's involved. We arrive after that. Now we're talking about just trying to save the adjacent structure. Again, we have to wonder if we're going to have, you know, big calls around here. We do. This one, phenomenal job. We have well-trained firefighters. We were lucky they were all in service. They all got there, and we were lucky that the weather cooperated with us. We don't like to rely on luck. We don't have to, but we got to give luck its due. But we're happy with that outcome, however we got it. Okay, so currently, this is your 2 station, your 8-minute response. You can see the 8-minute for 22, 8-minute for 21.
We dump all our resources, nothing in reserve, can't send anything to any other emergencies because we're all going to one. That still only gets us 12 people, which is short of our 16 full alarm and short of NFPA's guidelines of 15. All go to one resource. We could get to all of this in 8 minutes with all the people. We get 21 can get to all of that in 8 minutes. This is what that would look like adding a third station. So you get all this overlap here, all the way to finally getting some coverage down into Harrisville. This is what it looks like with our aiding engine from Ogden. This is what it looks like with third station aiding engine from Weaver 61 and Far West. Right now, we have to have both of those available to respond to get our full alarm within that 8. If one of those is out, we're usually waiting for a truck from South Ogden or from West Haven. So reducing our reliance on those aiding agencies is a good thing. Increased reliability overall, better distribution of call load, or reducing the risk of closest unit being unavailable to respond due to simultaneous calls for service. Right, here's our heat map again, shows where our highest call volume is. Right now, between the two stations, station 22 covers about 20% of the calls, and station 21, this station, covers about 80%. And I mentioned earlier, all those red dots that were in our Made It Missed It map, we figured out those were calls where 21 was already busy. So the reliability issue we're having now is that most of our call volume is happening here, which means that this station is busier than ever, running 80% of the calls. So every time that they're on a call, this shows us each time that station 22 had to come all the way down off the hill, have an extended response time, probably over 10 minutes, I would assume. And that entire time that they're dealing with that incident, that area is now unprotected. That's an issue for us, and it wouldn't be for some if they had aiding agencies surrounding them, but we don't. We have mountains here and mountains here. No help is coming from these mountains. So every time that 21 is on a call and another one of these calls pops up all the way down here, they're looking at, again, 10, 15 minute, maybe longer response times for 22 to come down off that hill. Average call lasts an hour to an hour and a half. That entire time, this area is completely unprotected. And the next closest unit would be 61 in West Haven or Ogden down here. And that's only if it's a fire, because they won't send units on that. All right, so what we're proposing is redistributing that with a third station, dividing up the areas like you see here, shifting our personnel around to get 5 people at each station rather than 5 and 7, that 5, 5, 5, capture that entire 89 corridor, we think, in under 4 minutes, and redistribute our call volume to 50%, 20%, 30%. Now, a lot of these red dots should start disappearing. All of these should disappear. A lot of these should disappear because when 21 is out, 23 should be able to come to that area and take them all. 22 can remain in this area to be able to take these calls in its own area. Then this one's kind of nuts and bolts, but we're just flat out of room. So even if we wanted to add additional resources with existing facilities, we can't. We have trucks backed up to each other literally this far apart. Like we just created a bedroom at each station to even be able to house our people. So we are busting at the seams. If we wanted to even add or needed to add an ambulance, we don't have anywhere for it to go. All right, decrease in insurance premiums. Again, showed you that, but this is the math. The math's out. It's not guaranteed, but there's a chance that if we build this station and we do everything else really, really well, we may be able to reach that 90% or above, or 90 or above, to become a Class 1 ISO city, which should, depending on who insurance you have and what metrics they're using, again, they're all going to be roughly the same. That should save you money on your insurance premiums. Roughly, you know, $1.3 million conservatively for the district, going from a 3 to a 1, which is what we would do. And then again, we know we need to not only look at how this benefits us now, but we need to start looking into the future. So staying ahead of the growth and increased call volume, reducing the risk of the closest unit being unavailable to respond due to a call volume growth. So anyway, went back to the planning zones. Where is the growth going to be? Like, how much is it going to be? We think it's going to be significant. Tried to project what our call volume would be in the future using the Cam Gardner Institute's population data. And that's this green line here. So if call volume were to trend exactly with population growth projected and their projections were correct, that would be this green line here. The blue line was a linear regression based on our call volume growth
from 2018 to 2025. So that just projected out. So far, 6 months into 2026, excluding paramedic outside of our area calls, we've seen a 281 call increase in the first half. Right now, we're running about 85 calls for 1,000 citizens, or about one call for 11 people. And that keeps going up. And again, we're not sure why it's increasing so much faster than the population, because right now we're tracking at 2028 numbers. Again, we're 2 years out from building the station. So this is when the station would come online. So even our most aggressive projections, we're outpacing those in the first half of this year, and we don't know why. Just to give you a little bit of context, we built Station 22 in 2018, finished, right?
It opened in 2017.
Since 2018, we've had 85% increase in call volume, but only a 16% increase in population. And we don't know if that's density. We don't know if that's demographic. We don't know what it is, but we know what's happening. So again, 2018, the district ran 2,165 instances. 2026, we're going to run probably over 4,000 is what it's looking like. Additional 1,835 emergencies annually. So we really feel like planning for the future is going to be pretty key for us. All right. So in summary, construction of the state new station would provide, I think, some really substantial immediate system response benefits. It is all part of the plan. It's been the plan all along. We're trying to be mindful, thoughtful, methodical about how we get there. But there is some real benefits day one when that ribbon gets cut for the entire district, not just people who live in Harrisville, the entire district. And then we do have to start making plans for the future and preparing. So we're out behind the curve. All right, any questions?
You can ask a question.
You need to open a public hearing.
No, just if you want to ask a question.
Right, yeah, no, just about the revenue. Are you going to have to buy more equipment for that building, or are you just moving equipment?
It's already built into our capital improvement plan.
But in those numbers, the increase for that, you said like $1.5 million spread over 2 years for this.
Yeah, so
equipment.
Equipment's already accounted for.
In the rotation.
Yeah, really what helped us do that was the Social Security money that helped us keep our capital improvement plan funded.
I mean, you have to buy new equipment, but budgeting as you go.
Yeah, so we have an equipment replacement schedule, and it's built into that. If the station doesn't get built, then we just modify it a little bit, but there's sufficient funding to fund a 10-year plan while maintaining an established reserve of $1.5
million. That $9 million number, exactly whatever it was, is that in 2026 prices or is that in 2028?
Yeah. Oh, the construction costs?
Right.
The 9.6?
Expected.
Yeah, so we have heard that the construction market softening because of the interest rates. So you kind of win one, lose one. But we really won't know until RFPs are completed.
And the other question is, how long a bond the district usually take on those?
So this scenario would be a 25-year dovetail bond, which would pick up the remainder of the Station 22 costs when it drops off in 2023.
When does 22 come off?
2032.
Okay, so the one will kind of get retired while this one picks up.
Yeah, so it's a way for us to manage that, right, until that one drops.
Cool.
Sir?
No question.
Okay.
Thank you, Chief Maxfield.
Sit down.
Okay, so we will now go to item number 7, which is a public hearing regarding the final budget. To do that, we will need to open the public hearing, and so we'll need a motion to do that.
I'll make a motion to open a public hearing. Second.
We have a motion and a second to go in to open a public hearing. Is there any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we are in a public hearing. We have two members of the public who are here. If you wish to make a statement to the board, if you would please, we'd like to hear your input. Please state your name and your address. And then...
For city. The city.
Okay, your name and city?
And social.
And well, they actually are.
My credit made
our board meeting policy does say each speaker will be expected to state his or her name and address before directing comments to the board. That's what prompted my And it's in the discretion of the board chair as to how long to allow for public comments. I think we'll just say 3 minutes. And if for some reason you feel like you need additional time and you're not being repetitive, I will honor a reasonable extension of that 3 minutes. So with that, if we could, anyone who wishes to address the board, if you please come forward and stand at the lectern, we look forward to hearing from you.
Over here.
Yeah. Great.
Face turn. Well, my name is Simon Post. Hello again, everyone. I live at 301 West 3925 North in Pleasant View. Been there about 10 years. Couple of things. One, I didn't know that last year's didn't get approved, so I kind of took all the wind out of my sails. So I was like, I must not have paid attention on my final bill.
Yeah, okay.
And yeah, I was like, wasn't paying attention. But yeah, I mean, I think compliments to the chief. I think that was an excellent presentation. I think, yeah. As a resident, I'm very happy with the service that we're getting. I think logically this makes sense. I appreciate the thoughtfulness that's gone into like crafting the budget. I don't want to say the leanness of the budget, but I can tell very thoroughly that you're being very mindful of taxpayer dollars. I came here very hesitant about like, okay, cool, you're going to build a new fire station, but then jack our taxes up to staff it. So I actually do appreciate the transparency of like, this is what you're looking at. When I got my notice, I was like, oh, they just want to see me. Because I feel like I've been here every year for, I don't know how often the districts raise taxes, but I feel like in the 10 years, I feel like it's been like 7 or 8 of them. And it's always, I always just laugh when I open it. I'm like, oh, I know where I'm going August 3rd. So yeah, but to that end, I really appreciate the thoroughness. I feel like very informed. And like I said, like to your point about the thing, I think as a citizenry, we need to show up. One, you guys prepared for this. And so, like I said, I thank you for the thoughtfulness that's gone into that. I support it. Let's do it. Let's get it done. I think like my only advice would be like, you know, do we wait a year with no tax increase or do you spread it out over 3 years? I know you hate probably doing this meeting. And I know I work for a public charter school, so I get the state requirements or everything, especially in public meetings. But yeah, that'd be my only advice. It's just like, do we bite that off over 2 years or do we start that just next year and do it? Because it is needed. And like I said, I appreciate the sacrifice and the work that your men and women do for the community. And it's not unnoticed. And thank you for your guys' service on the fire board here. I know that's a thankless job sometimes, but yeah, you took all the teeth from what I was going to say tonight. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard, right? Everybody's tight right now, but it's also like, you know, you don't want to be, and I think seeing the fire that we saw last year too, it's very apparent where we live. It feels like a wildland interface that's kind of like, you just get lucky that, you know, the hill's not on fire. So
yeah
to what it's worth. Thank you guys for what you've done. I appreciate the presentation and you got my support. And I still will come in 2 years when you raise it.
Yeah.
But
we want you here.
Just to see you. But yeah, I support it. And I really, Chief, it was an excellent presentation.
Thanks, Simon. You're welcome at any board meeting.
I got little kids.
He's got a light.
I got a light on Simon. I do enjoy it.
You wish to speak? Don't feel pressure. I'm just give you the opportunity if you would like to.
You know, I don't really have any comment. I was concerned about a nearly 10% increase this year. But I see you didn't increase last year. Just hold it pretty much to the cost of living increases, please. A lot of us are on fixed incomes.
Thank you. Could you state your name? And
I'm Bill Decker, 442 East, 3250 North, North Ogden.
Thank you, Bill.
Kind of wanted Jack Snappers.
Great. Well, thank you. That represents all of the public who are currently present. And so
none on Zoom.
No emails?
And there's no emails either.
Okay. Can I make a motion to close the public hearing?
Please.
I'd like to make a motion to close the public hearing.
I'll second. Okay, we have a motion and second to close the public hearing. Is there any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so we'll call item number 8, discussion and or consideration of the final budget.
I just thought that I had a similar concern considering going into this, and you know, I met with Chief about do we just kind of maybe move this down a year, kind of slow it down, move it down. And when I discovered the cost, I was very involved in getting the station up in the Pleasant View 9 years ago. Can't believe it's been that long. And the cost of that station compared to the cost of this station, my concern became kind of a, wow, we keep kicking this can down the road, we're going to ask for a bigger tax increase to get the construction costs. I did express maybe we need to look and see what the bond market's doing and some of these other things, and you know, at the very least get the property. But my concern, my focus became, wow, the construction costs are just insane. And what we did it for just under $3 million, I believe, wasn't it, Jim?
Barely over three.
9 years ago. Well, now it's nine. So that will just kind of address what you had, a very similar concern. So
and that was with the land donation.
Yeah.
Or I guess we paid $1 for it.
We paid $1.
Paid $1.
Donation.
Other comments, sir?
I'll just reiterate the comment I made at our meeting when we met in June. As everyone knows, I'm a little bit of a frugal one on this board, and I feel like for the first time in my life, I said yes to a tax increase for the first time in 5.5 years of serving on the board. And I do just still ask that when the time comes, we have the building built, that we then really try hard to be cautious in our hiring, that we need to staff at a minimum level and use only what is needed, and be careful with how we go about getting the station ready for use. And even consider that they would have up in 2 years, let's review all of these numbers and see, do we need to put it into use immediately? I'm not opposed to not staffing and having all of the apparatus of the immediately if we're like, hey, our numbers are holding, our call volume is down. Like, let's go over and flush the toilets every week, make sure the station stays in good repair. But I agree with Leonard that kicking the can down the road will probably end up hurting us in the long run. I just ask that when the time comes, we review carefully.
Great comment. And I hopefully Chief has established a record of reviewing often, right? And there's a constant return to the strategic plan and the objectives, and we have the data monitoring that we're receiving a quarterly report on. So I think there's no question that will be there will be multiple reviews of data and information, but it's a very valid point. And thank you. Any other comments?
I just had basically the same comments you just made, though. I mean, you got to start someplace with the plan. And when we looked at that, those charts of showing what the call volume is, and to me, although it's not my city, but I drive down there and I think Harrisville is in a position of growth that this planning in advance, I think, is necessary. And I just appreciate the discussion we've had in the past about this. I know it's been tweaked a little bit, and I know we'll just continue to do that in the future. But my opinion is that something like physical facilities and equipment needs advanced preparation. You just don't jump in and say, now I need it.
Without
Well, you can do that,
we don't want to.
It will come with a heavy price.
Yeah.
And that's what I think we're all trying to avoid and be as conscientious as we can. Anyone else want to make any comments?
But it's compliment the chief and the administration and the planning, because they, like what Mr. Post was saying with our, just to kind of give a little more transparency, is we have built, the chief's built and timelined out all the vehicle acquisitions over the years. And our board and the administration's had the depreciation scale in there, you know, being able to tuck away money as if we're still making payments on trucks, even when they're paid for, to have that fund, because the trucks are just going up in cost exponentially. And to order one, and it takes 36 months for an ambulance. Well, what would take for an ambulance?
I don't want to miss a year.
2 years, 4 years for an engine, double the cost.
So 48 months for a fire truck that we have to plan out for, and 24 months for an ambulance or brush trucks, these different things. And he's projected these, you know, as we retire old apparatus, new apparatus, going into the new building. It's just really nice to have this, the plan, and I can reference it anytime when I have anybody calls or wants to see it, be able to show that to people. And it's just a compliment to the administration and putting that, and it helps me as a visual person on the board, and I'm sure others will relate, to be able to reference that and go, yeah, this is going in this year, and we can, as we have to, you know, plan and do those things, it's so nice to have this kind of foresight going out, you know, 10 years. And to be able to move into a new building, probably with really, you know, ease, that kind of planning.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you.
I had a number of phone calls, number of text messages, emails from citizens and members of the Harrisville government, I guess you'd say, expressing a lot of concerns, and a lot of it is just lack of understanding. And I really do compliment the chief and the whole administration for what they do. They're very transparent. I've tried to express that. I invited them all to our meeting. Let's learn more. Let's help your concerns. And so I really appreciate you guys a lot. Appreciate your time that you put. I know you spent sleepless nights going over this. And thank you. And it really helps our decision in helping move forward. Our state's blown up. I had a chance to meet with the governor for a brief moment. And my number one question, no one would dare ask him a question. I said, I do. Why are you allowing so much growth on our city? Why? I mean, it's hard to stop it, but it's, houses is one thing, but we're not getting houses. We're getting large communities of apartments, condos. So it's not single family dwellings with space around them. It's large amounts of people. And I love that their vision, that we're preparing for the future, not getting behind the ball. Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
Kristen, do you want to say anything?
Ditto. I mean, ditto what everybody said. And Chief, if I were a citizen and I didn't know anything about this, I think I would have seen the 10% and would have been like, okay, I'm coming. You did a really good job of laying that out. I even understand it 100% better than I did. And I feel like I had a pretty good understanding of it. Yes. Kudos to you. Thank you for doing that.
I would just like to maybe suggest that we take this and put it out on our website. But I mean, so that when you get a call and say, well, you know what, just go watch this meeting, go watch this presentation, because it's too bad that more people did not see this presentation.
Our audio is being put onto the Public House website since May. So all you have to do is click on it and you can listen to the whole thing.
Is that, like, do we call that out on our website?
No, but I can.
I think you should.
It is also on our website meetings as well. I've also put the audio in there as well. So nice if they get the meeting, whatever meeting from May on, the audio is present.
Presentation too, the slide deck, I think it'd be good to have posted. There's a lot of good information there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll work on. All right.
To me, one of the most important things you showed up there was the call volume. I don't think people realize how much we're really out there. I mean, when you brought up that one, the so-called growth along the highway now,
six calls.
People who live up by me don't know what's going on unless you drive by and see what happened to the.
I do.
What happened to the Baltimore?
They go right past
you. We're going to have an influx of people. I mean, being ahead of the game is going to be cheap.
I'll just say briefly that, first of all, when I think about just where we've come in the last 3 years and the level of professionalism, it's incredible. And Chief, thank you for your leadership. Thank you for the way that you go about leading this organization. We know that it's not just run on a whim. It's not run, and that's not saying that it ever has been, but you know, we have a high degree of confidence in the way this district is run. And it's data-driven, data-informed, and it gives us a lot of confidence. So, you know, I've supported the station, you know, really for a long time. But what I appreciate is that we have a compelling case for why it should be built and why we should start it now. I know that we've had a fair amount of discussion. That's like, what is the right time? What is the appropriate? We've noted some other, you know, other agencies or districts that have miscalculated their growth and made decisions maybe a little hastily and then maybe regretted it later. I don't feel like we're in that position. I mean, it just feels like all of the indications are that now is the right time. And I just appreciate having that data to inform our decision. The last thing that I wanted to say is just, and this is, I wish there were more members of the public that were here to hear this. And that is simply to just compliment the members of this board. They take seriously, very seriously, the fiduciary duty that they have, not only to this organization, but more importantly, to the voters of their respective cities. They do not come in here and just disregard the impact of our decisions on the public and their constituents. It's an honor and a privilege to come here every month and to see the way that they approach the decision-making process. We don't all agree. We have very different attitudes and that's, I think, the beauty of the board. We need all of those voices around the table. And for me, it is just a privilege, a tremendous privilege to be able to serve with my colleagues on this board. And it gives me an even greater sense of assurance that we're going in the right direction. The fact that it seems like we have reached a point where we all agree. And I take great comfort in that. And just want to express my gratitude and my admiration to all of them for the way that they approach their service on this board. So with that, well, and I didn't mean to, I mentioned Chief Maxfield, but certainly he's leading a team in the administration that is just fantastic. And we just want all of you to know how much we appreciate the professionalism that you all bring to this organization and carrying out our duties and responsibilities. So thank you very much. All right. So with that, we'll move to item number 9, consideration. Well, actually, I think we need a motion. I'll call it. Number 9, consideration. Consideration of Resolution 26-09, a resolution of Northview Fire District, Utah, to adopt the final budget and property tax rate of 0.0012 for Northview Fire District for the fiscal year beginning July 1st, 2026 and ending June 30th, 2027.
I'm hearing my motion. Please read that verbatim. I'd like to make a motion. Consideration of Resolution 26-09, a resolution of Northview Fire District, Utah, to adopt the final budget property tax rate of 0.0012 for Northview Fire District for the fiscal year beginning July 1st, 2026 and ending June 30th, 2027.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second. As stated, is there any further discussion? Okay, this will be by roll call. Chris.
Yes.
Leonard.
Yes.
Kristen.
Yes.
Meredith.
Yes.
John.
Yes.
Yes.
And Tim is yes. The rule that passes unanimously. Thank you very much. We'll now entertain a motion to adjourn.
Okay.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Yeah. For the benefit of the public, our next meeting is scheduled for
August 27th.
August 27th at 5 p.m. here. Okay.